Welcome, welcome. We are here on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Deacon John may have the flu. He's experiencing symptoms of such and contacted me a little while ago and said, can I take the show? So here I am, Angela Black, taking over today for Deacon John with his show Liberation Nation here on the number one 100% listener-supported commercial-free radio station on the net. And I am lucky enough, oh my goodness, last-minute stuff happens, divine timing happens, and guess who's here with me today, everyone? The one, the only, Vinny Eastwood. Welcome, Vinny.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure if I'm the only one because there's probably, like, I don't know, 16,000 parallel dimensions going simultaneously with other Vinny Eastwoods that are like just real douchebags or something. But yeah.
So 15,999 douchebags.
It sounds like a really good movie, you know, like it'd be the sequel to Seven Psychopaths, 16,799 douchebags.
A beer on the wall, 16,700, beer on the wall. I don't know. You take one down, you pass it around. Do you know that song in New Zealand?
Of course we do. It's a beer drinking song, and our entire country is drunk most of the time. In fact, there was a recent poll that said that about half the women voters who voted for the current Prime Minister, the former Federal Reserve Banker, John Key, voted for him because they thought he was very handsome. And I think this highlights the drinking problem that we have in this country. Ladies, no more beersies for you.
No more beersies on voting day anyway.
Yeah, righto.
All right, so that's crazy. You know, I do come from one of the biggest drinking states in the United States, Wisconsin. We make beer there. That's what we do. So I can relate and wonder often, whatever happens on voting day and the result the next day.
That's the great thing about drinking in a cold climate is that you don't need a beer fridge, you know. You just leave it outside in the snow with you around a fireplace or whatever while you're drinking it up. It'd be fantastic.
True. It is cold up here. And as a matter of fact, I made some soup yesterday, some beef barley soup, and I got to keep it outside all night because it was so dang cold. So indeed and agreed.
Coming up soon towards the end of this month, I think I'm going to actually be taking a month off. So I need to recharge the batteries because I've learned over the years that basically you do need recharge time. It's not something that people can do all day every day in a perpetual kind of way. It's actually a really really tough job being a radio show host and an activist. And sometimes we just need some of that wind down time kind of thing, like at the end of the year to sort of enjoy life for a bit. And kind of remember what you're fighting for.
True that. I completely agree. I often have found myself taking time off when I do, especially when I do a daily show here on this station, which is, by the way, everyone, freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio. What I want to say is, when I was doing a daily show, it just got to be, my mind got fried. And it's really important to take time off because if your message gets swayed because you're jaded, something like that, it truly affects the ripple effect that we leave, that footprint we leave, that stamp we leave as truthers on the radio, as communicators. It's not that our message is necessarily altered. It's just that there may be a vibe behind it that says, I'm exhausted, I'm just pumping this out today, and then maybe it has a different effect as it reaches through. At the same time, it could be an opposite thing, and I just could be completely full of crap.
Well, really there's a tonal thing going on, and the world's made of frequencies and matter built upon matter and life built upon life, and if there's not a whole lot of life inside you and you're kind of like angry or depressed or something, those vibes actually do come across in your voice, and whether or not people realize it, they pick it up. So it's kind of your responsibility as a radio show host, I believe, to keep yourself I think this is actually what good producers are about, is they keep the talent happy. And when I started up on American Freedom Radio back in 2010, my producer was a man named Mitch Santel, who was like, oh my god, God, the most amazing producer you could ever hope for. Yeah, he really, really supported me and taught me everything he knew about the radio business. And he actually helped me to become more knowledgeable about who I am, particularly who I am on the radio, by giving me so much advice from his years of work in the music industry and in talk radio. And, you know, I think sometimes in your life, those people will come along who actually are just sort of like meant to be there right at the time. And it's been really good because I think he's gone back to the States now. You know, he's living like 4 kilometers away from a nuclear reactor, just soaking up the rays in Malibu or something. And the element that I thought was quite important about this is to, you know, always remember the people who helped you get where you are today. Like, you know how there's this saying, oh, remember the little people, you know? And I think that's actually really, really important, because otherwise you get too full of yourself. And if you get too full of yourself, you get too far ahead of yourself.
Yes, very true. And I'm glad you're saying that, because there is a staff of producers here on Revolution Radio that are often, I don't know about unsung, but definitely unheard for the most part. And they are dedicated to helping hosts do their shows. I personally am self-produced, but I've been doing that since the beginning at Revolution Radio. So, you know, but I think it is important, exactly, especially if you're a persona such as yourself. I don't know. Do you have a producer now, or are you self-produced, Vinny?
I'm essentially self-produced, but I do have Sean Bell, who connects to the studio for me and connects up my guests for me. So he's a right. he's a bells and whistles knobs and sliders kind of guy,
and a gem.
I've actually been quite impressed with how Johnny on the spot that he is, because back in my previous role, the board ops were sometimes. Because they had to produce like 6 shows in a row or something like that, they'd like go out to take a leak or grab a glass of water or something like that, and just when they left the room, the guest would drop off, and I'd tell them to reconnect them, and they wouldn't be there, kind of thing. It happened occasionally, but mm-hmm. Yeah, there's none of that here on Revolution Radio with the fabulous producer Sean Bell. And you know, this does, it reminds me of a conversation I had with a truther on Facebook this one time. He said, I'm a hardcore truther. And I go, really? Because I've never known a hardcore truther to refer to themselves as actually a hardcore truther. And he's, I was like, so have you done a radio show? Have you done YouTube videos? Have you got a Facebook thing that you're sharing out information, a website, a blog, anything at all? And he's like, no, I just watch stuff and occasionally like it and share it and what have you. I said, oh, so you're a keyboard truther, are you? And he took that as an insult, but I actually meant it as a compliment, you know, because I think about war, you know, like we're in a war for freedom, yeah, globally speaking. And if anybody remembers that in any kind of battle or any sort of prolonged engagement, especially what we're into now, there's all sorts of roles within the armed forces, you know. I mean, let's think about this. Let's say the soldiers on the front line had no medics, had no people setting up base camp and putting up the tents and ferrying people back and forth, nobody to put up the showers, nobody to cook the meals, nobody to do any of those things. They wouldn't survive more than a couple of days on the front line. And Correct. So it's the people that actually do a lot of the background work, in my opinion, that are actually doing a lot of the important stuff. And it's often those who do the most important jobs who receive the least amount of recognition for it, and I think we need to change that.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, everyone has a role, and when that role is fulfilled properly, it makes the whole machine run well. Whatever area that's in, whatever you know, maybe there's you know, whether it's a community situation, and I'm not necessarily talking about politics. I'm talking about you know. The neighborhood, you know, this guy has all of the, you know, my neighbor, for instance, has a bunch of awesome survival things that he picks up as he travels on through thrift stores and estate sales, et cetera. And And then, you know, whatever I can offer him. And then we all seem to come together. When I was out of town during trash day, and my neighbor who was watching my cats literally thought, and he actually had a brain and thought, I should take out their trash because it's trash day. And I was just so impressed. I mean, it's something very small, but at the same time, it really continues to make the machine well oiled in whatever venue we are speaking about, including war, obviously, which we are in right now, the war on truth. So the keyboard truther, as you're saying, I also looked at it as not an insult, but as a compliment, and I think it's great. And all you did was ask him because you were interested in defining what he meant by hardcore truther, and that's something else that's very important is operationalization of terms. You know, in certain cultures, other people will take what could be a compliment as an insult. And it's very interesting to watch all of that happen. So I'm glad did this hardcore truther person understand that you weren't insulting him after the next part of the conversation?
He called me an egotistical so-and-so and blocked me on Facebook.
Which, unfortunately, is a war-type mentality.
Hey, you can't please anybody, but you try. You do what you can.
Wow. All right. So we did this last minute, and I'm very thrilled that we did that. And we are just doing some, intro stuff here, getting a little chat out of the way. I have an article here on fracking. One of the issues that is true to my heart, the anti-fracking movement and the fact that, you know, they're making Swiss cheese out of the planet. So I do have an article here, which I thought I'd read a little bit of and ask your take on it. And then I'm wondering if after that, since we didn't really have time to plan this show, maybe you have something that you would like to get into regarding current events in your world. Does that work for you?
But not really, because I don't watch the news. I mean, I'm mostly like some kind of a douchebag New Zealand philosopher at the moment. You know, I think I need to get myself a cane and a pipe of some description. You know, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, really?
You know, and some spectacles, maybe even a monocle. Yeah.
Wow. Vinny Eastwood and his monocle.com.
Yeah. I can give you a monogram with my monocle.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be like a stamp with the monocle attached to it. And it's interesting you say that. I often do not watch mainstream media news as well, but this usually is a current event show. So I did peruse a few websites that I utilized a lot in the past on my shows, like Blacklisted News, Natural News, IntelliHub. And then I also sometimes will peruse some of the mainstream media situations more as a sociological view and study than actually believing what I'm reading. I tend to look at mainstream media news as, a way to study what the main gen pop is being fed every day and what people are believing.
It reminds me of the movie Shooter with Mark Wahlberg, and he sits down on his computer and he goes, okay, let's see what lies they're telling us today. And I just thought to myself, you know, I've got quite an eclectic background and knowledge on a number of topics. And what was funny is that I can watch or listen to mainstream news now just like as a one-off. And it's almost like, you know how some people, like, they read between the lines? Mm-hmm. I can kind of fill in what's missing in between the lines now. So I'll read out an article on air, and then they'll say something, and then I'll go, well, actually, that's also da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and actually explain all of the lies that are inside an article without even reading it first off the bat or even researching it, because I've done so many interviews over so many years with so many people on so many topics that the chances are I know more about the article than the person who wrote it.
Interesting. And I love your confidence about it, because you truly can back that up. And it's funny you mentioned that. Throughout my life, whether it's a current topic or not, a current event, that type of thing, I often have that same talent where I'll be told, you know, the initial, some person's take on the initial, event that is up for question. And I'll often see all of the stuff surrounding that particular, you know, viewpoint as well. I often do, you know, find myself and much like you, and forgive me for, you know, trying to own up to the Vinny stature, but no, much like you, when I when I see an event, I often can't, I have to make jokes. I have to be comical and go, well, you know, this thing's also going on behind the scenes. I mean, come on, you know. And I see things like that the same way. So I'm not saying I'm as experienced as you, which I'm not, but I am. I you know.
Well, I have a good example.
Please,
like,
I walked into
my house and my wife tells me, "Hey, Vinny, did you hear that there was a truck bomb that got defused in Times Square?" And I say, "Ah, don't worry about it, baby. It was probably just the FBI." And it turns out it was. You know, I mean, look. It's interesting how accurate you can be when you're like really, really cynical and jaded. And I think that's why most journalists become cynical and jaded, is because they want to remain accurate.
Yeah. Wow. It's a big statement. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, I found myself becoming like this, just like, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so cynical. It's so jaded. I'm just like a real journalist now. That's awesome.
I'm just like a real journalist. So in other words, you know, you were the Pinocchio, not really, because Pinocchio was a little liar. But I mean, you were the wooden boy and now you become a real boy is what you're trying to say.
Yeah. I was a wooden journalist and now I'm a real journalist. Yeah. No qualifications necessary.
I'm reaching there. I know.
That was actually quite funny because I was just thinking about a journalism class that I took back in sixth form when I was 16. Jan Irvine, who teaches the trivium, you know, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And that's basically the questions you need to ask to do your proper grammar in order to be able to report something as fact, is be able to answer all of those questions in sequence. Otherwise, you obviously don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the inverted pyramid.
That was the only thing that they taught us in journalism class. Really, is asking those simple trivium questions. And it was interesting because I saw a Facebook picture, you know, like a meme about what journalism is supposed to do. And it's like, tell the truth, tell both sides, help people who don't have the ability to get their stories out, to tell their stories, and all of these other things. And I was just thinking, my God, not only does the mainstream media not embody a single one of the principles of journalism, but me, without even knowing what those principles are, embodied them by instinct because I wasn't a dishonest scumbag out to make some money so I can get myself a trip to Tahiti and a Gucci handbag. All right, that's all these people care about.
Wow. You know, that's very interesting. Gucci, Fendi.
Onto the fracking article.
Okay.
Read the fracking article.
Well, and interestingly, when I first came across the word fracking, it was when I was watching the second version of Battlestar Galactica, and they utilized it as the F word. And I always looked at that. I had seen that back when I think before I knew what fracking was, I'm pretty sure. And I found that to be a brilliant use of the term, first of all, because they got to swear like sailors through the whole thing while using the word fracking. And then when I did learn what fracking is, I thought, my God, that was an absolutely perfect analogy, or I should say synonym, that type of thing. And what else is interesting about that is that Edward James Olmos was the star in that series, and I don't watch a lot of series, but when I watch them, I'll binge watch them all the way through. Edward James Olmos is a water activist, and so it's very interesting that the word fracking was used, and I do find it to be somewhat similar to the F word. So anyway, this is coming from Zero.
It's not the F word, but it's Edward James Olmos the F word.
Exactly, very, very nicely done. Okay, so this is coming from Zero Hedge via Blacklisted News, and it involves the state that is right next to me, California, big state, going through a huge drought right now, as is Nevada, by the way, but they are not as largely populated, so I believe they're able to distribute their water much more easily than the millions of people that are in California. And I was actually driving by my lake yesterday. I live by Lake Tahoe. I live in Lake Tahoe, and I took some pictures yesterday. The lake is at its lowest level that it's been in 15 years, and we were literally, you know, there are docks where the boats come in and obviously, attach themselves to the to the dock or the pier, whatever you want to call it. And these things were actually dried up all the way back to where the entire pier was on sand. And another 50 feet out, there was nothing but sand. And I was in shock. I'd never seen it. I'd never actually blatantly seen it like that. And I took some pictures yesterday. So yes, there's a drought. And also there's fracking. So here we go. This particular article says, dear California readers, if you drank tap water this morning or at any point in the past few weeks or months, you may be in luck as you no longer need to buy oil to lubricate your engine. Just use your blood and think of the cost savings. That's the good news. Also the bad news, because of the California's Department of Conservation's Chief Deputy Director Jason Marshall told an NBC Bay Area news station, California state officials allowed oil and gas companies to pump up 3 billion gallons, call it 70 million barrels, of oil fracking contaminated wastewater into formerly clean aquifers. And now aquifers, which at least on paper are supposed to be off limits to any kind of activity like that, are protected by the government's Environmental Protection Agency, an agency which obviously there's another, you know, three-letter alphabet, you know, word. They're all over the place, FBI, EPA, BINGO. So an agency which it appears was richly compensated by the same oil and gas companies to look elsewhere. So you have the Environmental Protection Agency, which is, you know, supposed to be something that's protecting our environment, obviously, taking payoffs from oil and gas companies to go ahead and pump dirty water into the clean aquifers. We're talking 3 billion gallons of crap stuck into what little water exists in the aquifers right now. So you have all that. I think I said aquifers, you know, you say potato, I say potato. And the scariest words of admission one can ever hear from a government apparatchik is in multiple different places of the permitting process, an error could have been made. And then it just goes on to say this, and I'm going to kind of wrap this up in a few minutes. Because nothing short of a full-blown disaster prompts the use of dreaded passive voice. And what was unsaid is that the biggest error that was made, in other words, or is so to speak, that they quoted, is that someone caught California regulators screwing over the taxpayers just so a few major oil companies could save their shareholders a few billion dollars in overhead fees. And now that one government agency has been caught flaunting the rules, the other government agencies and certainly private citizens and businesses start screaming. After all, some faith in the well-greased, pardon the pun, government apparatus has to remain. And it continues on just a few more. I think I'll go with a couple more sentences here. It's inexcusable, says Holland Kretzmann at the Center for Biological Diversity in San Francisco, at a time when California is experiencing one of the worst droughts in history. We're allowing oil companies to contaminate what would otherwise be very useful groundwater resources for irrigation and for drinking. It's possible these aquifers are now contaminated irreparably. Okay, that's a huge statement. So the only clean water that we have, well, you know, at least some of the only clean water we have in the state of California, is contaminated because the EPA is being paid off by a few major oil companies to save their investors and or shareholders billions of dollars. So if that's not complete and total, you know.
What this reminds me of is what was the film, Steven Seagal, On Deadly Ground. He does this speech at the end and he says, if a company gets fined $25,000 a day for dumping toxic waste, but they're making $10 million a day in savings by not disposing of it properly, then it's only good business to continue to do so. And one thing that you have to really understand about the oil industry is that they're inexplicably tied with the government. I mean, you know anything about how the Rockefeller Standard Oil started up? It's because competition is a sin and it's a cartel. The whole thing is a cartel. Okay. So think of oil company. When somebody says oil company, think criminal resource extraction cartel. That's actually how it literally translates in the original Latin. And what people don't realize is that following rules isn't something these people actually have to do, because right, they can make the rules up. And it doesn't matter how much people jump up and down and complain and go, oh, you've done this, you've done that. It's already too freaking late. The ship has sailed. The horse has bolted. Whatever analogy you want to use, your water's contaminated till the end of time. in the height of your drought. And what strikes me, and I was talking with Suzanne Posel about this. You remember the Bundy Ranch debacle that was going on? Well, apparently the under the Agenda
That's
21 protocols.
Yeah, that's in my backyard.
And they were actually trying to get fracking consents along his ranch and everything. And this was kind of played down in the media or hardly even mentioned at all. And when you look at, say, what's happening in the United Kingdom, Ian R. Crane, Fracking Nightmare, very, very good search to run there. What his conclusion is, and I tend to agree with him, is that fracking is part of the Agenda 21 protocols to get people off the land. Okay, so you have a look through ancient societies, none of them survive very long when their water source dries up. Okay, so if they want to depopulate California or Wisconsin or England or New Zealand, and they want to get people to be forced into the megacities that they're building now, poison the water, you know, because what are you going to do, bro? Because you need it to wash yourself, you need it to drink, you need it to do everything. Absolutely everything that we do in human society is predicated by our need for a constant supply of water. If you contaminate that in a particular area, that area very soon after will have no humans living in it.
Right, and not only that, it will also create war amongst the locals, if you will, because there will be a mad dash for whatever bottled water exists in the stores. And when those shelves are empty and the next shipment of water isn't coming for a few days, people will start to get angry with their neighbors because they're going to want that water. We're at a break right now. Everyone, I'm in for Deacon John today. My name is Angela Black. This is Liberation Nation, and I'm joined with I'm joined by Vinnie Eastwood today on this show here on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. I'll speak it out. I'll get it out. All right, we'll be right back after the end of this break. Thanks. Welcome back, everyone, to Liberation Nation with Deacon John. Deacon is possibly sick with the flu, and it's very interesting. I've known a lot of people in the last few weeks that are getting sick with the flu. So take care of yourself, people. Do a lot of vitamin C. Liquid vitamin C is good. Ester C. And just basically eat healthy and wash your hands a lot. I don't know what else to say. Just, you know, stay out of public arenas when everyone's sick. And then again, for that matter, they're probably spraying it from the skies. So don't go outside. Just stay inside. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, I am Angela Black, if I didn't mention that. And you are listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one 100% listener-supported, commercial-free radio station on the internet. And we keep kicking because of donations from people like yourselves. So if you can find yourself on the donate button or the site support button on freedomslips.com, we would highly appreciate you figuring out how to. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, and I'm doing a lot of stumbling today with my verbiage. I'll slow down. If you can find yourself with a couple of dollars in your pocket, please do donate to the station however you find that plausible and possible. We would greatly appreciate it. It's great. You can get the new seed pack. There's a new shipment of seeds that just came in from Nighthawk himself, the owner of the station, who basically for a donation, which you can look into. I think there's a couple of different levels of donations that if you donate money to the station, you find yourself with great, wonderful prizes, including a bunch of non-GMO, non-altered, non-terminator seeds that you can grow wonderful, beautiful fruits and vegetables with. And I guess fruits are on trees, so I guess it would be considered vegetables for the most
part. They're non-terminator seeds. Come with me if you want to eat.
Exactly. So, and by the way, if you're wondering whose voice that was, everyone, let me reintroduce my esteemed guest for this first hour. Vinnie Eastwood is with me here on today's call. So thanks for joining me, Vinnie, at such late notice.
Oh, that's good. Hey, I was just checking my website rankings, and I'm in the top million websites in the world now. Yay!
Hey, out of how many? How many websites are there, Vinnie?
There's, I think, approximately 500 million.
500 million websites.
No, wait. No. I think it's more like 100 million.
Oh, okay. 100 million. Fair enough. That's 1,000, I think. 100 million? Wait. No, so, that's 1,000,000,000. There you go. It's 1,000. No, it's 100,000,000. Sorry. All right. You know, it's, I have to write stuff down if I'm going to do math. I mean, what the heck?
Oh, that public schooling system strikes again.
Oy vey. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
The empire strikes back.
You know, I really enjoy your sense of humor, and it's really a treat. You know, usually there's Deacon John on this show, and I think he – I don't know what he does on Tuesdays, but usually I believe the one, the only hijacker sometimes joins Deacon John during the show. And then the Crow usually hosts a half-hour segment on the market. crowsmarketwatch.com. Unfortunately, they both have issues going on. Deacon John is not feeling well, not sure what's going on with the hijacker. But then the Crow has unfortunately had some private matter to deal with, so he is not here as well today. So here you and I are, and I'm thrilled. You happen to wake up early. I'm like, do-do-do-do-do, Vinny, do-do-do-do-do. And now here we are. I know that's very intelligent, isn't it? The way I speak.
Well, things have been getting synchronistic a little bit lately. Like yesterday, a whole bunch of things happened to me. A friend of mine, he needs to move house, and he wants to kind of move into my area or something like that. And as we went out to lunch, and when we were there, a mutual friend of ours came down and sat down with us, and both of us were talking before he sat down about how hard the work is and basically how it just takes a lot out of you. And this guy sits down, and he's pretty elderly now. He's like around 90. His name's Alan. And he, instead of retiring and doing nothing, he starts writing these books of poetry. Oh. And he said something along the lines of, it's better to it's better to break down than to rust away. And I thought about that kind of really intensely, and I was like, you know what? He's actually really kind of right, because as soon as you stop working, you kind of lose your lust for life. You lose your motivation to a certain degree. And on our way home from there, my friend was looking for a new place to live, because his, you know, landlord's kicking him out after like 10 years of living there. And he wants to kind of live in my area. And just before we pull into my street, we see a for rent sign on a house that's just one street over. And we go in, we grab the number, and he might be, you know, moving just down the street from me, kind of thing. And it's sort of like, I got a call from my friend Jono as well. I was just thinking about him and thinking about going out and doing stuff or whatever, and he turns out that he's going to a music concert. And incidentally, I was thinking about you, Angela, just this morning, about the conversation we had the other night, and then here you are calling me up. And it's almost like I'm... like I've become more finely attuned with the ether sort of thing. Like I get these feelings, and then whatever I'm feeling just sort of like pops there right in front of me. It's kind of like paying attention to your own intuition. What that tells me is that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you're speaking my language completely. I often experience that, you know, that thing where I was just thinking about you and somebody calls you out of the blue, that type of thing. Yeah, I often find that there is a path and a journey that follows that initial reconnection with whomever. And it all, you know, when those types of things happen, I always see good coming out of it. And I do experience that on a regular basis. And I find myself somewhat responsible for that, with that power, if you will. And I don't know if it's a power like over people. I don't mean it that way. I mean, there is, and I guess power may not be the correct word. It is intuition. It is timing. It is synchronicity. It's all of those things. And when one is in tune and receptive to that, it is, and also honed enough to filter out negative vibes at the same time, because that's a skill in its own right. So when we walk through the day and find those things available to us, and by the way, okay, let me finish that thought. So when we find those things available to us, I do feel it is our responsibility to pay attention and not discount said moment, you know, that happens next after that thing. And also, I love, you've told me this a few times. You've told me this a few times now that you surround yourself, you know, one of the things you've said to me and to a few of us here that now that we've become friends here, since you're a part of the Revolution Radio family. And by the way, I do want you to promote your show in a minute, or I can do it for you, whatever. Actually you're probably better at that. So, okay. One of the things you said to me is that you surround yourself with people who are smarter than you and or are more knowledgeable, but also usually that entails the elderly and or people that are older than you and have maybe experienced more life than you. And I completely concur. And I get goosebumps when I think about it, because I know you're on the right path. If you're listening to the older people who come into your life, because I know they truly appreciate having a voice, and I know that we truly are honored to have them surround us. And unfortunately, at least in America, there is ageism going on, and you know, maybe not so much in other parts of the world. I don't know. I really haven't traveled the world. But I do think that, you know, people discount the elderly on a regular basis, and I find that to be one of the greatest moments of, I'm going to quote you, scumbaggery, you know, that I can find. If people discount the elderly and treat them as, you know, some type of lower than or plebeian person, I find that to be just ridiculous and unfortunate for the individual who's doing that, and I watch the repercussions of that and the general population. So if there is a youth, and I don't, you know, you're a wise old soul, so I don't really want to call you youth, but you are not even 30, and I hope that's okay to say, because I just said it. But basically, the generation that you come from, I really hope will embrace the wisdom of the elderly people and learn so much, because what else do you have? What, the internet? You know what I mean? So I think I'm done with my thought process, and well, I want you to comment if you could.
Well, I actually find it difficult to relate to people of my own age to a large degree, because it's kind of like my elders have instilled with me a lot of knowledge, and with knowledge comes power, and with power comes responsibility. So a lot of the time I'm not actually trying to relate to them. A lot of the time I'm actually enthralling them and imparting knowledge to them, that kind of thing. Like, I'll go out to what had happened one time? Oh, a truther rap artist here in New Zealand hosted a big kind of gig. Well, it wasn't really big, but there were about like five or six rap artists that got together to do a gig, and they invited me, and I was sitting with a lot of them afterwards. I like rolled three joints and then gave it to three groups of the rap artists and stuff like that, and of course they were very appreciative. And I sat there and like I was telling them all sorts of things, and they were like, "Wow," you know, like kind of mesmerized by some of the stuff that I know. And it's interesting, because that's exactly how I felt coming into this movement, when I was speaking to my elders and having them impart such knowledge, such wisdom and experience upon me, that a lot of the time I was just sitting there going, whoa. And it occurred to me that I now have comparable levels of knowledge to most of my friends and elders now. And so that makes me into sort of like a teacher, you know, like you've got to actually, in order to teach somebody something though, they have to see you as a teacher, right? They have to see you as learned. They have to see you as somebody who actually has knowledge that they want. Basically, you have to kind of prove to them in a very short order of things that you know more than they do. Not in an arrogant, oh, I'm smarter than you kind of way, but I have some knowledge and I want to impart it to you, and I'm not going to charge you for it. I'm not going to belittle you or anything. I'm just going to share a little something with you, and you can take it or leave it. You know, you can make up your own damn mind. And it seems to me that when all of us are sharing knowledge, it's actually kind of really difficult. when you're dealing with people who aren't on the same wavelength, and this makes us not want to converse with new people a lot of the time, and our circle of friends gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and eventually we wind up with only a few old friends who we know very, very well, who don't really teach us anything anymore, and we begin to stagnate. We don't get we don't get radically more intelligent on a day-to-day basis, because we're talking about the same topics with with people that we're familiar with. And this is why it's so important to, find people who are smarter than you, who know something that you don't know, because if you don't think that you've got something to learn, then you've got something to learn. And it seems to me that if you're willing to listen and let people impart knowledge to you without getting arrogant about it and say, you think you're smarter than me, you think you're better than me, and not kind of like get all a hump on your back with some kind of superiority complex, you know, then you can actually advance yourself down a path of wisdom. If, on the other hand, you're adversarial about it, if you've still got too much ego about it, and you aren't willing to admit that you're an idiot who doesn't know what he's talking about 90% of the time, as we all are, I think 90% of the time, we don't know what we're talking about, we can't back it up with facts, and we're ignorant. Right. And I'm the first to admit that I'm pretty ignorant. I haven't accumulated this knowledge via experience, actually doing things in the real world. I've only absorbed it vicariously by living through the lives and the experiences and the feelings and the knowledge of others. Right.
Well, and so this means that you walk the walk too, Vinny. You do walk.
Well, I do, but I only walk my own walk. So that's the 10% that I do know about, is the things that I've actually done and verified in my own life. The rest of it seems to be largely theoretical, because you can't live 100 lifetimes and accumulate the exact same experiences as, say, 100 learned elders that are in your life. You actually are forced by proxy to live vicariously through their experiences and try to build upon their lessons by applying them in the real world. Unfortunately, it means that the vast majority of the knowledge that you have is actually theoretical knowledge. It's not something that you can actually do. Like, let's say somebody tells you there's aluminum, barium, and strontium in the rainwater.
Cesium. Yes.
Whatever, and you don't have a lab, and you don't have the technical expertise to actually test that water sample yourself, and you actually have to give it to somebody else. See, that's what I mean about knowing something and then being able to actually apply that knowledge directly, and that's what I mean by ignorance. If you don't have experience in something, then you're living vicariously through the knowledge of others, and you're actually, in reality, ignorant. You're aware of it, but you haven't actually got experience with it. And there's a very important distinction there, because if you don't understand that distinction, then you're going to start to become really arrogant, and you're going to think you know everything when you actually don't know jack.
That is such an important statement, because, you know, we were, I think, talking on a non-on-air phone call, and we were discussing the fact that certain individuals – in the truther movement, or even certain movements in the truther movement, you know, tend to sell out or whatever, because, you know, they do become very full of themselves. And it is true. And I'm not, of course, nobody here on Revolution Radio does that. But anyway, but what I want to say is that it is true what you're saying. The vicariously learned truther has the responsibility of realizing that, hey, I'm reading this. Like the article I was reading, I was reading it. So, you know, I can surround myself with all the articles I want, you know, and that type of thing. And I respect the people that don't listen to mainstream media news. And for that matter, there's a real fine line between truther news and mainstream media news at this point in the game. So, yeah. Now, for instance, Jane Goodall, you know, speaking on primates, okay, she is not an individual who lives vicariously through knowledge of others. That woman, for instance, knows because of her experience. Most of us are on different percentage levels, obviously, regurgitating truths that we feel we believe in, and then we, you know, go ahead and communicate that. So you're completely correct, Vinny. And, you know, it's funny. You know, I have to say this. Some people find you to be very avant-garde and very. There's no word here for you. You know, you're Vinny. You know, you're. It's a.
Actually, there is a word, and Zen Gardner used it to describe me. It's inimitable, and it means can't be imitated.
Okay, so say it again, please.
Inimitable.
Inimitable.
Yeah.
Okay, and that means.
Means can't be imitated.
Can't be imitated. Wow. That, okay. Care to elaborate?
Yeah. Well, if you can't imitate something, it means that it's totally original and it's in its own unique way. So much so, in fact, that nobody can even attempt to sound like you or be like you because you're so unique. Can't be imitated.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, they can try, and that, you know, mockery or imitation is a great form of flattery, whatever that is.
I mean, I'd like to see one day, actually, somebody like come on radio or TV or something like that and actually do a Vinnie Eastwood impression.
Oh,
because every time somebody's tried, it just sounds really, really hokey to me. And it's like, that's not as stylish as me.
But, you know, God bless them for trying. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know. You know what? I haven't discussed that with you, your theories on God, but I don't know if that's an on-air phone conversation.
Well,
so,
I've discussed it on air many times.
Okay.
My theory of God is that God is a macro-organism and that we have levels of life that live within it. So inside my body are 5 trillion cells. To those cells, I'm God. Inside each and one of those cells is 5 trillion other microscopic, even smaller down the scale, organisms. And inside each one of those, there's another million organisms for which each organism up the scale is a god to them, right? So
correct.
My god is probably, I'd say, the Earth, which is several trillion organisms, biological and otherwise, ranging from the microscopic bacterium that live on our material plane to deer and eagles and fish and whales and what have you. So you've got all these organisms on this one creature. Okay, it's a macroorganism, a much larger living entity that is comprised of all the living entities that are actually living within it. Yeah, and the way it interprets its will is from a sort of vicarious interpretation of the psionic energy that comes off of all of the creatures on Earth. So, if everybody's like meditating one day or whatever, you'll notice changes in the atmosphere, or there might be less earthquakes, or something of that nature. All the latent psionic energy that's coming off of all of us at any one time actually is starting to accumulate in a sort of wireless field, sort of like the cloud. And sometimes you can pick up signals from that cloud, and that's why your DNA is what they call a fractal antenna. It's tightly bound in a circle, kind of like a corkscrew, just like a normal antenna.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually an antenna structure, and this is what they actually call it in the technical term in science, is a fractal antenna. So you're capable of picking up signals, you're capable of sending them up into the organism in general, and you're capable of downloading them as well. And it just depends on how finely attuned you are to it. And this is what we call the will of God, or quote-unquote, the source. Now, the Earth itself is only one cell in a god above it. So let's say there's the Milky Way galaxy. That's probably the next organism up. So there's 100 billion stars within that, and several hundred billion planets. So all of those accumulate the psionic energy of all of the living organisms within all of those planets, all of those star systems and things of that nature. And that organism has a will of its own, but that's only one cell in the greater scheme of things, because we've seen through the Hubble telescope that there are like tens of bazillions of galaxies. Like, imagine that you're a microscopic organism, and then you're dealing with a relatively enormous creature that you can't even perceive, like the size of a human being. All right, but you've only got the awareness of a microbe. Okay, that's basically what we are when it comes to the universe. We're a microbe, and our awareness is nowhere near what it would need to be in order to actually understand the outlay of it, because we've only got a subjective experience. This is my experience. I currently am experiencing this world as Vinny Eastwood, and I get to interact with all of these other organisms on my scale, right? So I can pick up a little baby ducky or something like that and carry it back to its mother, as I did when I was in Queenstown. He was lost, and I feel really good about that kind of thing.
Right, and I hear you. I saved two tarantulas in my life in two different situations. I saved two tarantulas walking on the street.
Yeah.
I did.
Now, yeah, there's one part of humanity that says that we're a parasite or a virus, you know, and that we, kind of like in The Matrix, you know, they move to an area and they multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed, and then they move on. And I think to myself, well, we're departed from the natural world to a large degree. Now, that makes us one of two things, and I think we get a choice as to which one we get to embody, and we can change the tune anytime we want. We're either a parasite or we're a guardian. All right? That's what happens. That's the difference. If you don't fit in with the natural world, you're either there to destroy it or you're there to protect it, mm-hmm, from outside influences. And it seems to me that my interpretation of kind of like the will of God per se is it reinforced by synchronicity in my life. Okay, so if you intuit things and then they happen and you start to learn to pay attention to your intuition, it'll take you from like point A to point B, point C, and you won't even be able to predict what's going to happen next, where you're going, until it actually just happens right there and then. And so you kind of need to be, or at least this is my opinion, you sort of need to be fluid in your life, because as soon as you start having some kind of a plan about where you're going to turn up and what's going to happen and all of that kind of thing, if it's a very specific plan, sort of like, hey, there's a great looking gift shop there on the side of the highway or something, can we stop and go check it out? No, we're sticking to the plan. And what happens is, if you plan everything far too much, you, mm-hmm, miss out on all the opportunities that that everything is actually having on offer to you. And
true.
I think this is why people wind up living their lives miserable, doing the same job, not communicating with their children, absorbing entertainment through television and other various forms of screen, which destroy your brain on a daily basis, and they don't actually feel happy. It's because they're ignoring the signals from the source.
Yes, listen, we're on a break. Vinny, I'm going to, you know, beg you to stay. And then I'm going to be bringing in another guest as well, Bruce McDonald. I think you guys have interacted. Revolution Radio, everyone, freedomslips.com. I will be finding out if Vinny can join us next hour, or at least part of it. All right, we'll be back. Liberation Nation. All right, welcome back, everyone, to the second hour of Liberation Nation, normally hosted by Deacon John, who is not feeling well today, so we wish him our best, and I am honored to sub in for the day. I know our good friend Mona Radler, who has the Feral Hippie Show here on Revolution Radio, is usually the designated host for Deacon John, so I just wanted to give a shout out to Mona and her show and her vibe and everything she does for the station, as well as everyone who helps out the station on a regular basis. It's pretty awesome. We have Nighthawk himself, the management staff, the hosts, the producers, and all of the listeners and the chatters, of course. Hello to everyone in the chat room. No matter where you're listening, everyone, we are happy to have you aboard. This is, by the way, the 100%, number one 100% listener-supported radio station, commercial-free talk radio station. I think radio station on the net. I'll say radio station like six more times in the next one sentence. Anyway, La la la. Here we are on the net, and I am encouraging you all to find the donate button or the site support button on our actual website, which is freedomslips.com, or I believe another way to reach us is revolution-radio.com, and then there are other things available to you. The archives, for instance, I subscribe myself. I don't even think as a host I have to, but I enjoy contributing to the station, and I welcome all of you to do just that because it keeps us in the free speech mode. We are not commercially run. I talk too fast. Commercially run. I said commercially. Is that crazy? All right. We are not commercially run. We are not politically run. We are here to speak our minds. And guess what, everyone? Vinnie Eastwood has decided to join me for the second hour. And we also have Bruce McDonald joining the call. So it's All Star Day. Right here on Revolution Radio, I'm Angela Black, and welcome back to the show, Vinny, and welcome to the show, Bruce.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to listen to you go on one of your riffs, Vinny. Very, very lucid. I don't know how you do it.
I know, right?
It's called Ridiculous Amounts of Coffee That One of My Sponsors Gives Me. seriously, for talk radio, if you have a look at what caffeine does to the brain, you get on average a 10% increase in your reflexes, and you get a marked increase in your cognitive ability, so your ability to think, speak, process information, react to things that you're saying is actually increased markedly. So before you go on radio, if there's any hosts listening, have a coffee. For goodness sake.
And cafe-ing.
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Yeah, cafe-ing. I like it. Cafe-ing.
Well, I drink so much coffee that I actually had to create a new term for it. I call myself a caffeined.
A caffeined. See, you're just a wise individual with a lot of stuff. That's a brand. I'm ready. All right.
Bruce has some kind of financial news or something, don't you, Bruce?
I do.
I don't know. We brought you on here for a reason.
Well,
okay. All right.
Let me just say a couple of things quickly. As usually, The Crow has a segment on Deacon John's show, which starts right now. And The Crow is going through a personal issue right now and is not here as well. So it's kind of like one of those moments in space and time where we all get to connect, and that's really awesome. I did want to see if we were finished with the fractal antenna comments, and then I wanted to go into anything on Bruce's mind and also, find out what your responses to that are, Vinny. So we were talking about fractal antenna. We were talking about God. We were talking about what that means. We were talking about Earth. We were talking about basically, levels of cellular.
Well, I can kind of explain this because the reason why my belief in God kind of is the way it is because of a discovery that was made in the early 1900s where a guy invented a granite crystal microscope as opposed to the electrostatic microscopes today that have about 10,000 times magnification. This guy invented a machine that was able to get 60,000 times magnification. And the reason this technology was suppressed was because of what he found. He would look inside a cell and it would see that it was made up of all of these other cells that were all operating independently as organisms. Then he'd look inside one of those and then it would be made up of all of these other cells that were operating as independent organisms. Then he'd look inside one of those and so on and so forth. So the theory goes that
we... Is that the Rife telescope? The Rife telescope?
No, it's not a telescope. It's a microscope.
Oh, microscope. Sorry.
Yeah. But, theories and speculations are rife. So the conclusion that this really spelled out to me is that we live in a fractal universe, that there are organisms in infinite scale down the chain as well as organisms infinitely up the scale and chain. And what this taught me is that my body and my cells are home to countless civilizations. of organisms that are living within each and every cell. And as a god to those cells, I'm not a god to other people, I'm not a god to Earth, I'm not a god in any stretch of the imagination, but to these cells that I'm a part of, I kind of am. And just like people who are living on Earth can influence the sway of how the Earth kind of runs, you know, we get to interact, we get to change things, we get to meditate, blah, 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 whatever your thing is. I think it's kind of like in Star Wars, how they talk about midichlorians, these microscopic organisms that live inside all human cells that continually whisper to us and tell us the will of the Force. And I think what that is kind of like a literal translation of what my belief structure is that all these organisms that are living inside us are continually whispering to us and telling us the will of the Source. Whatever that Source is, I don't know what it is. I think it was Nikola Tesla who said that I do know that there is a Source where all inspiration and ideas come from, but I'm not intelligent enough to know what that Source is or what its intentions are. All I know is that I can get inspiration and ideas from it. And something that struck me as sort of like a causal factor, or something that sort of proves this, or at least it did to me anyway, was the inventor of the telescope, the first inventors of the telescope. It wasn't actually invented by one guy. It was invented by nine guys who'd never met, who lived on opposite sides of the Earth on the exact same night.
Whoa.
When the signal is out there, and our DNA acts as an antenna, and we can pull down those signals if we're paying close enough attention. So I think this is why a lot of people talk about, you know, listening to your heart or concentrating, and this is what meditation is what some people are trying to use in order to interpret that will. Personally, I don't meditate whatsoever. I've never had cause to believe that you can accomplish a whole lot with your eyes closed doing nothing. And it seems to me that if you're actually awake and aware and paying attention to everything, you can start to interpret the signals a lot better.
Mm. Yeah, I meditate when I sleep.
Yeah.
I'll be the odd person out here. I do meditate and have been for
great.
Over
and
30
welcome,
years.
Welcome, Bruce. Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah. Now, there's different kinds of meditation. I mean, it depends what school you study with. I mean, even when you we can say that there's a class of meditation in the Buddhist class. There's a class of meditation in the Hindu class. Some meditations are breathing based, and that's when you get into the Qigong and the prana in the yoga tradition. And some are pure consciousness. They deal only with what's called the 10th gate or the final chakra, the crown chakra. And that, in my estimation, is the most important form of meditation, and is, I guess, a cousin to things like remote viewing and things like that. Now, however, I agree with Vinny that the inner life can become imbalanced when you become a monastic and you do it. It should be integrated into a normal life, working a job, raising kids, being married, whatever you're going to do with your life. But I do think it is important. I think if you go long enough without that stillness, you forget about it. Revelation and remembrance are synonyms in my spiritual dictionary. You know, when something's revealed to you through an expansion of consciousness or a sudden awareness of knowledge you didn't have a moment before, there's also a remembrance that comes along with it, like, oh my God, how come I just didn't always remember this?
Deja vu.
And yeah, that's probably a second cousin to it as well. But if you can ideally structure your life so you're serving that inner directive all the time, like you do, Vinny, like with the radio and everything, then yeah, maybe you don't need meditation. I certainly do. I mean, I don't feel too centered, too still, or too spiritual after a 10-hour workday in a big bank. So I do need it, and for me, it's a lot of filtration process. I think some meditation is about, think of it like renovating a house. Like you buy a total beater, and you want to do the whole thing. You gut the whole interior, redo the floors, everything. That's a certain form of meditation that's getting rid of all the bad thinking processes in you. That can take weeks, months, years, depending on the person. And then you get into the new home. And then that's when it gets really, really beautiful. And then if you can get to that stage of the meditation, you'll never quit because it's so rewarding and you get so much from it. But yeah, you It's a phenomenal experience. And I'm, you know, we're the only mammal on this planet with the expression of consciousness and individuation and inner life that we have. We know that other mammals dream. We can see dogs in REM sleep, and I've never seen a cat's eyes in REM sleep, but I'm sure they do dream. But we're unique. We're sort of at the top of the creational pile here on planet Earth, and I think that some attention has to go to
top of the creational pile.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think I may have plagiarized that from some Billy Meyer thing I read on the internet, but okay. Nonetheless, I like to be honest about these things.
Yeah.
Plagiarism's a big issue. but that's my two cents worth. But living it fully and expressing it is I think the highest form of spiritual life. And so, you know, Vinny's absolutely correct.
It's kind of like, I don't know if you've seen a movie called Major Payne, about this, crazed military dude, becomes a teacher to these JROTC kids. And, they try to like go in and mess with him while he's asleep, but he's sleeping with his eyes open, and it really freaks them out, you know? And I think that's kind of like, there's many, many paths to the truth. And In some cases, you need to sleep with your eyes closed for a long time. But after a while, if you train yourself, you learn to dream with your eyes open. And that's kind of what I've started to do, is I've actually started to be able to dream in living color while my eyes are awake, and have the inspiration and the knowledge kind of download to me while I'm fully conscious of it. And I don't need to quiet my mind anymore. I used to have to. I think maybe 2 years ago was when I filmed Amit Goswami, the quantum activist. It did like a 10-hour lecture. It was excruciating, but very, very interesting. And one of the things that I found was particularly awesome about it was the group meditation part. We only did it for like a minute or so. And I think maybe if you can sort of vibe with this and even try to do it, you know, like if you close your eyes and you just think for a second, okay, so here's me. I'm in the darkness. I'm in the blackness. There's nothing around me. There's nothing beside me. There's nothing in front, nothing behind. I am completely alone in this darkness with my eyes closed. Then expand your consciousness to include the people that are right next to you. So they would be the other two people on radio with me right now. Then just kind of gel with that. There's two other souls, there's two other beings that are in here with me in the darkness. And beyond that, if you expand your consciousness a little bit more, then there's all the people that are listening on radio right now, thousands upon thousands of them, all with their own lives, all with their children, their careers, and all of the infinite complexity of their lives. And now we're starting to connect to them psychologically through the darkness. And beyond them, there is our countries with all the people in it. Beyond that, there is the entire planet with all the people and all the creatures in it. And you can channel all of that energy, send out good vibes to every single thing that is currently alive on this planet.
Yeah, the ripple effect.
And you can download that energy from all of them, like you're sharing it in a ring, right? You know how everybody was standing in a ring holding hands or whatever, and the energy kind of like goes round the circle like a Hadron Collider, getting faster and faster and faster. And in so doing, you're actually able to kind of have this kind of calm and stillness, and you realize that things aren't all dark, and that you're not alone, and then there is something out there that you can reach out to without even being anywhere near it. And I think that's one of the most important realizations for me, is that you're never alone. You never are. And the idea that you are alone has been tried to, be propagated, I think, through the media. When you're sitting there on your computer games or watching TV or whatever you're doing, in order to distract yourself from the fact that you're not alone, you know? And I think that if we've got that realization, if you've got that kind of spirit in your heart, and I'm not getting all kind of like wavy or iffy-wiffy here, because when we were doing that group meditation with Amit Goswami, it was only for a minute, but you could feel it. You could feel the change in your blood. You could feel the change in your aura sort of thing, you know? So we're talking about something that's actually real, but it's not something that everybody's totally aware of, right? It doesn't matter what your path is to the truth. I believe that there are many, many, many paths to the truth. And I don't think there's any reason to say that one person is better than another or worse than another, unless you're a completely psychopathic scumbag without these gifts, on the other hand, of creativity and love and empathy. But what it says to me is that my role in this planet, in my country, just in myself, is mine and mine alone. But that doesn't mean that I am alone, and I never will be, because I understand that everything is connected. When you look at POW camps in Vietnam, as an example I like to quote quite regularly, they found that those who were atheist, the soldiers who were trapped in those cells alone by themselves, they died. Whereas those who were really, really strong believers in God, they didn't. Because when they're alone in that cell, they're never alone. And when you have that realization, there's almost nothing that can kill you. Like, in a spiritual sense of the word, it's very difficult to get depressed. It's very difficult to lose your motivation, because you realize what you're fighting for.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, very, very, very lucid dissertation there, Vinny. I also come from a country with the which has the Queen on its money, Canada, and we have this fellow over here called Wade Davis, and he's an ethnobotanist and an anthropologist, and he lectures.
Ethnobotanist.
Yeah, so somebody's going to have to Google that. I really can't.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah.
And his official title for a number of years, I'm not sure if it still is, was Explorer in Residence at National Geographic. You guys may know him from a movie that got made from a book he wrote called The Serpent and the Rainbow, about voodoo in Haiti. Has anybody seen that?
I think I have.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a serious Wes Craven movie. He's the guy that usually does the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff, but it's got a really high rating on IMDb. But he and a bunch of researchers, and he said this on a lecture on our national broadcaster, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, a number of years ago. He gave this lecture series called the Massey Lectures. And he was talking about the complex chemical products derived through natural elements through the shamans in the rainforest in the Amazon. And he lived with them for years, like right in the bush. And there were visiting professors from Princeton, Yale, Harvard, and they could not believe these guys running around in loincloths, missing teeth, what they could do chemically. They described it as postdoctoral. And they asked these guys, how did you figure this out? How do you do this? And more importantly, how do you pass it on? Well, the answer to passing it on was oral and example, which is the highest form of teaching rather than studying a book or something like that. It's like standing beside a master and you're an apprentice and you do what he does or she does. But more importantly, how did you learn it? The answer was this: the plants talk to us. Isn't that?
That's correct.
There's my footnote to you're never alone. This life is going on all around us. And when you forget about it, it's because you've allowed yourself to get rutted into work and duty and kind of forgot, if this is even a suitable expression, forgotten to remember. You know?
Yeah, forgot to remember. Exactly. Forgotten to remember. It's a really, you know, it's a very interesting play on words. And at the same time, it's also incredibly deep.
Yeah. My wife, she speaks to the plants in our gardens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I find, and sometimes she stops for a bit and you'll notice that the plants don't grow as well when she stops talking to them.
Well, it's very interesting and true.
Yeah, they can hear us. They can interpret us, and I think this is something we've got as a species, is a really awesome ability to really interact with the other organisms here on a much deeper level. And I think it's part of the New World Order agenda to distract us from that, to make us forget how powerful and how interconnected we all are. And it's part of like a spiritual divide and conquer tactic, in my opinion.
To keep us away from nature, is what you're saying?
No, to keep us disconnected from other organisms, to think that solipsism is more or less the way of things. Like, oh, this is all there is. Everything is my perception. I created all everything and blah, 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 blah. Right. You know.
So Vinny and Angela, what do you think leads us to a place like 2014 when we have forgotten this? When you look at the Western tradition of astrological ages, beginning with the Golden Age and the Yugas and the Indian traditions, and there must have been a time when we knew this, right?
I mean, before the internet.
is this a natural process we're going through, this Kali Yuga, this what appears to be a fulfillment of revelation if you're biblically centered?
I don't think so. What were they talking about? It says there's a source and it all lives inside us. What they discovered with the Large Hadron Collider is what they call the God particle, the Higgs boson particle, and it turns out that particle is actually in every living human cell. All right, so they spent $8 billion risk creating a black hole that would suck the entire Earth into it just to discover the God particle, which we have inside us all along. And that's exactly what all the religious teachings have actually tried to teach people amidst a whole bunch of distractions this whole time, is that the kingdom of heaven is actually within. That's where your source of inspiration is. That's where your interaction is. That's where everything is.
Okay. Yeah. So here's my response as well. All right. Well, we have the In current modern times, we have the agricultural revolution, we have the industrial revolution, and then we have the information age. And maybe they're all age, and maybe they're all the revolution, whatever it is. We have the, you know, when farms and large families mattered for cheap labor, and then, you know, that whole thing happened. Then the Industrial Revolution, you know, happened. Then we're now in the information age, the technology revolution, whatever it is. So when you ask that question, Bruce, about what does our interaction with nature, as Vinny brought up, and oh, we have a break coming up. Wow. All right, everyone, we'll be right back for the last half hour of the show. Thank you so much. Vinny Eastwood and Bruce McDonald joining me. We'll be back right after the break. Thank you, Revolution Radio.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Revolution Radio. This is the this is called the Liberation Nation or something. I think Angela's back there in the background. Are you there, Angela? Okay, I'll take that as a no. So we're just going to pretend like we're live anyway. And I think we're trying to reconnect Bruce back up, and Angela's kind of like trying to jostle around things in the back here. So I'll just kind of try and compensate, you know, like somebody who buys a really, really nice car in order to compensate for something that they're lacking. I have this idea for Revolution Radio, and I think it's a really good idea, is that when you've got a community together and a family within it, it's kind of like I would say it's sort of like the rings of Saturn and the planets. So all of your listeners out there who are supporting Revolution Radio are actually helping our family on this network to continue to survive, to continue to produce content, and in so doing, you're playing a part. Now, Dr. Rima Labo, who also has a show on this network, she told me one very important thing. We were having a discussion about how to convince people of things. And what she told me was very important, and I think it bears repeating, is that on average, it will take 7 different people apparently Dr. Rima Labo has been dropped from the network. But anyway, apparently it takes 7 different people to tell you the same thing before you will abandon a previously held belief. Now, what that means is if you see somebody, I don't know, like at a checkout in the supermarket or something like that, and they're touching, let's say, for example, the ink on the receipt when they give it to you, you could tell them, hey, that receipt there has a toxic derivative called BPA, bisphenylalanine. And what this actually is an estrogen mimicker, and it can either give you breast cancer or turn the men into girly boys. Okay, so you just say that one thing to them, and maybe you're the first person to say it to them, and they'll go like, oh, whatever, and you can just walk on to the next person. Or what if you're the 7th person? Angela, we can still hear you in the background there. Can you hear me? No? Okay. Yeah, this is a really bad talk radio here, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. It's not my fault. I'm doing the best I can. It's not even my show. But anyway, if you happen to be the seventh person who've mentioned that thing to them or whatever, chances are you'll actually click them on. And so the big mistake that truthers go out and do, and they actually try to convince people straight off the bat. You don't know, I don't know you and or anything or whatever. But what I'm going to try and do, on the other hand, is try and convince you, regardless of the fact that you're not going to believe me and you're going to get angry. And... Angela, this is really bad. Okay, so yeah, we're getting total back chatter. Angela's not looking at a computer, not listening to it either, and yeah, it's just really bad all around. So we need six people to tell Angela to mute her mic. You know, just six different people, and maybe it'll add to it and get it all sussed out. But what the important lesson is in all of this. Don't expect too much of yourself, and all you got to do is play your part, okay? Kind of like Big Sis said, if you see something, say something. And it works for the truth as well as it does for reporting false flag terrorism attacks. That's about right, isn't it? Don't put too much, you know, pressure on yourself to try and convince somebody that 9/11 was an inside job, or that vaccines are really bad for you, or that GMO food will give them tumors and what have you. If they're not prepared to accept it, they're not going to listen to you. And it's kind of like, you know, when you try to, I don't know, get a tick out of your leg or something like that, the harder you try to actually get that sucker out, the more he's going to burrow his head deeper and deeper under your skin. You know, people like retreat into their turtle shell to a psychological degree. And yeah, playing your part, that's all you got to do. Not too much pressure, but it just means that you're kind of responsible even for complete strangers around you. Who are, like you were, not completely aware of their surroundings, not entirely sussed, as it were, when it comes to trying to understand things. I don't think anybody ever really fully understands things, but, you know, we can try. We can try, because there's no harm in trying, is there? And I think this is the way that we're actually going to wind up waking up people around the world, is not taking responsibility for waking them up, but only taking responsibility to play your part as one of those seven people that will help them abandon their previously held ridiculous ideas. Angela, are you back? I'll take that as a no. Bruce is back. All right. Welcome, bro. Any thoughts? Yeah, actually, I was kind of done, you know, meandering. I thought I made my point, you know. Just keep going. Angela's like in the background doing all bunches of stuff. She's not muting her mic or checking the computer or something. It's just bad talk radio. So we just basically got to overcompensate. So we're just got to basically overcompensate for it by talking and talking and talking and talking. So, Bruce, go! Bruce, there was actually a mainstream media article that confirmed exactly that DNA carries memory and trauma and inspiration and intelligence and all of this stuff like down through the generations. You're completely correct.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a call from Studio A now, so we've just got to crack that open, and we'll get that done. So I'll see you on the other side, Bruce. And we're back. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We've been kind of off air for a section there, and Angela Black is having troubles connecting here as well. So I must sincerely apologize on behalf of the network and myself. Now, there was a question Bruce was asking me, and I think that may have been off air, about our individual contribution to the collective and how we, is there any individual path, or is it all just kind of like one thing, you know, like everything's kind of going in a set path and everybody just sort of has to jump on the current and actually go with it. I don't think so. I think that we all have individual abilities, individual attributes, and individual capabilities, right? So it's the unique way that we contribute that actually matters to the world. If you do the same thing that other people have done, you're not contributing, you're following, okay? And following is very, very dangerous because, A1, you don't know who you're following or why you're following them. And this is what actually becomes really, really dangerous, is if you don't know what your path is. Now, my path, I mean, just using myself as an example, I can't really speak for anyone else, but my path was kind of set before me. You know, I got raised in a like the youngest of five kids, so, you know, naturally I become a bit of a narcissistic attention seeker later on in life, and so naturally I get myself into talk radio, naturally I go on a YouTube channel and all of that kind of stuff, initially seeking the self-aggrandizement. But then what I start to learn is that my suffering, my pain, my trauma were actually lessons that I'd ignored for the most part for a long period of time, until I kind of had that aha moment. And the aha moment was that I'm not the only person who's traumatized. I'm not the only person that's having a rough time here. I'm not the only person who actually is trying to struggle their way through life, that there were many, many others. And what this taught me is that you need, or at least I needed, to play a role in this entire movement, a role that didn't exist currently. And I think I've kind of defined it as being a comedian/counselor. Okay, so I'm capable of being there in a synchronistic sense when people need me to be. I was always very, very good at intuiting how people feel some of the time, and always very good at being there when people need me and listening to them intently and making jokes about it to make them feel better about these terrible things that have happened to them. And since I had that realization, it's actually started to change my life in a number of different ways, whereby I actually kind of feel sort of like a nucleus, where there's all these electrons and protons revolving around me, and every now and again they'll come into contact and I will help them and then just send them back out into the other parts of the electron proton sort of a sphere as they revolve around and around and keep on going. I find the ability to energize others, to inspire them, and to help them deal with their traumas is sort of my gig here. Now, a lot of people don't like that about me. They think that because I inject a sense of humor into such serious topics that I'm not taking the topic seriously. They're wrong. You know, it's just that simple. They're very, very wrong. They don't know what they're talking about, and they haven't helped anybody in a long, long time. And they don't really care to either. And I think it's when we realize our obligation to those that are around us, that we actually can play not only just a role, but a massive part in human development, one person at a time. That's when you realize your individual power. That's when the source starts speaking to you. That's when synchronicity start occurring into your life. And that's when things start rolling really, really well. And you kind of get into a flow there. Once you figure out what you're here to do, that's when things will open up, not beforehand. Angela, welcome back. No?
Oh, thank you, Vinny, and I apologize.
Apologize again. Like, I think you need at least 10 apologies for what you've just put us all through. It's just kidding.
Oh, my. I will. I'm sorry. Yeah. All right. So anyway, yeah, I don't even know. I couldn't hear anything. I thought it was gone.
How about
so.
We not talk about the technical issues and pretend like we're live on radio and people actually want to listen to something other than discussion of the technical issues and apologize and then going back on ourselves like a snake eating itself.
I'll breathe now.
Vinny had just basically paraphrased Pablo Neruda, and I agree completely. He was talking about laughter and comedy being part of serious topics, and Pablo Neruda said, the great Central American poet from Chile, said, laughter is the language of the soul. And I totally agree with that. I mean, if you can't laugh, I mean, don't talk to me about anything else. Have you ever been around somebody who can't laugh? And worse, they can't make you laugh. It's a huge thing in life. If you can, my God, how could you possibly go through life if you can't laugh? Like, I don't understand how anybody could.
It's funny you should say that, Bruce, because just yesterday I was, I kind of realized how I interact with people now, is that I actually spend the conversation as another attempt just to make them laugh and have fun. Right, really. Like, that's the only reason I'm having a conversation with somebody is like to try and make them laugh, and the jokes just come out thick and fast, and we just basically have a good time, and I make people feel better by making them cackle about things that scare them, horrify them, and basically cause them pain. It's really ironic.
It's what I do as well. Okay, wow. So I have no idea what happened for about 15 minutes, but I did have one last or continuing comment. We were talking about interaction with nature. I think Bruce had posed the question before the break, and I apologize. I did not hear it. That's two, right? So I have about eight more to go. I did not hear what had happened when we came back from the break, and thank you so much, Vinny, for your professionalism, of course. And the question was something along the lines of how do we view the interaction with nature today? And I somehow had this, this thought where I was talking about the in the recent time period that we live in, the agricultural revolution, as it's coined, the industrial revolution as it's coined, the information age as it's coined, and the fact that, throughout that time, throughout the industrial and information eras that have happened, obviously people moved to the cities and became isolated more and more so, less involved with family, less involved with nature, this type of thing. So I do find that where we are now and what we are doing in this time period is to reacquaint ourselves with that, and I'm not talking about everybody on the planet. I'm talking with the people that I'm talking about people who are in the cities and who may not realize that the trees are communicating with us, that the bushes are communicating with us. Rocks are communicating with us. All these different things, and to watch the cutting down of trees for construction projects. Really, I feel pain. I actually feel pain on a regular basis whenever I see a beautiful non-injured, non-dead tree being cut down. I watched this happen on Sunset Boulevard one time. Bill and I had an office over there right in Hollywood, right in West Hollywood. And there was this two-day process where it was almost like an alien ballet, whatever that is, where these huge trucks, one would come in and cut down the trees, the other one would come and scoop up the trees, and then the other truck behind it would repave the road. And this was not an accident. And they cut down all of these, ficus trees because they weren't producing enough leaves for shade or something like that, or maybe they were producing too much. And I watched the murder. It was like a war zone. I watched the murder of nature happen for the good of progression or something. And it made no sense to me. And I was there with not only my husband, but a dear friend of ours. And we were just watching this and it was so loud. And it was a war zone. And honestly, no, were humans dying? No. But were trees dying for no reason whatsoever? Absolutely. And I felt pain. I did. So I don't know. I think if we're here now and what our next agenda should be is to reacquaint ourselves with nature, especially us city folk, if you will. Many people live in rural areas and have farms and this type of thing. What I encourage is for, you know, hey, you're walking down the street, you see a tree, why don't you say hello? Seriously. So I think that's my answer to Bruce's question way before the break, way before this whole thing happened. So.
Now, Bruce, are you actually still with us there? No, he's not. He seems to have dropped off. We'll try and add him to the call, Angela. And also there's a second call in the background there that's going, and I think Bruce is attached to that one. But if that one hangs up, that'll be a good idea. Now, I was also thinking about this when you're talking about like communication with nature, plants, animals, etc. That's what Bruce was talking about earlier about the guy who's studying ethnobotany, and it's basically just the way that ancient cultures interact with plants and flora, fauna, that kind of thing. And it seems to me that a lot of things have kind of like spiritual aspects to them. There's tribes in the Amazon jungle, for example, that there's these two different plants. You take either one of the plants by themselves, it doesn't do anything. But you take them both together and you have a deeply religious, spiritual experience, right? You have these massive trips. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering as well, just exactly how much tripping you need to do before you realize that you can trip without taking a trip, right? There was this guru in India, I think it was, and they were trying to discover what a guru saw, okay? And they gave him an acid tab, and he took it, and nothing happened. What they realized was that this guy had actually ascended to such a high spiritual plane that the effect of lysergic acid on the brain was actually null and void because he already saw the world in that much color, in that much brilliance, in that much beauty, with that much euphoria. that to do this drug, which is supposed to induce those same kind of feelings in normal people, didn't work or do a single thing. Now, there's two aspects to this. One's very dangerous and one's very awesome. One is like you can develop yourself to that point. You know, you don't have to hurt anybody. You don't have to do anything bad or whatever in order to obtain that power. It's simply about spiritual awareness and basically, like you say, interacting with these plants and things and having an awareness of the life and the very varying levels of it around you. And the other one is the real dangerous one, which is to say that perception is reality and that there's no such thing as reality. There's no 3D universe, there's no 5D, 4D, there's no D's whatsoever. And that's called solipsism, where you think that you create absolutely everything, that your perception and your interpretation of everything that's going on around you is your creation and your creation alone, and that life is just a dream, and that you have no responsibility other than to yourself in selfish ways to keep yourself happy and content and not do anything better by humanity. Frack that. As
right.
Opposed to the aquifers.
Vinny, take us out since you were...
All right, I'll take you out. All right, you're listening to Revolution Radio, ladies and gentlemen, at freedomslips.com. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Liberation Nation, taken over by me, Vinny Eastwood, because I'm so awesome. Thank you very much for listening. And we will see you on a new... Yeah, and Angela Black. Let's not forget that. And there will be another show right after the break, assuredly.